Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Hi, this is Randall Libero, and you're listening to Spirit of Film Conversations. We broadcast each week on the premier channel for transformational talk radio on the internet, Seventh Wave Network, online at seventhwavenetwork.com. Movies are changing the way we think, live, and dream. So each week, we showcase today's independent and visionary filmmakers whose movies evoke what I call the spirit of film, which is a metaphor for the movie's magical power to transform our lives. And today I have as my special guest, producer-director Robin Simon, who's made a wonderful new film that's just being shown now, just opening this week in New York City, called Transformation, The Life and Legacy of Werner Erhard. So, Robin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Randall. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners. Thanks for having me.
Well, this film is brand new. It's just getting out there. So, Robin, tell us a little bit about the film. It starts off with a showcase of some of the EST training that happened back in the 70s. So, just kind of give us an idea of how this all got started for you.
Well, it's called Transformation, The Life and Legacy of Werner Erhard, and it really is a look at the influence of Werner Erhard's ideas on our culture, some about the man, and of course some about the controversy that seemed to follow him throughout his public life when he started EST and throughout the 90s until he left the country. And he hasn't been really seen publicly since 1991, right before a 60 Minutes piece came out on him. So this is really a look at the influence of his ideas and what he's up to now.
Well, one of the remarkable aspects of transformation, and you can see more information online at www.transformationfilm.com if you want to surf to that site while you're listening to the show, it really has a very unbiased approach. It doesn't hide anything. It's a very revealing documentary, and it really gives you a look into Werner's personal and private family life even. And one of the great things about the documentary is that it has a lot of film, extensive coverage of Werner's work over the last 30 years, from the S training to the Landmark Forum, which is what it's called today. Can you just talk a little bit about what it was like to start off on this project for you personally? What were some of the things that interested you in doing a documentary about this, about Werner?
Well, I was a former news reporter. I worked for different network affiliates in Texas, the NBC affiliate in Southeast Texas, and then the CBS affiliate in Austin, Texas. And then, of course, I went on to be a producer at PBS for several years. And I, you know, love documentaries, and someone approached me about doing this project, and I thought it was the right time in our society, and there were a lot of people who felt that perhaps there was an openness in our culture to hear the real story. And I did some research and found out that today his ideas, the programs based on his ideas, exist in 60 centers in 30 countries. So it's huge. It's huge, and people are really getting a lot out of his program. So I thought there would be tremendous interest to bring it full circle, talk about the influence today and where they originated from.
Well, if people don't know, Werner Erhard has not been in the United States, as far as I know, for a very long time. And so he's kind of avoided coming back to this country, and we'll get into some of that a little bit later on. But one of the things that really struck me about the film, for those of you who are not familiar with Werner Erhard and don't know anything about what we're talking about today, you may want to look him up. I'll spell the name for you. It's Werner, W-E-R-N-E-R, Erhard, E-R-H-A-R-D. And Landmark is the current incarnation of his teachings. During the 1980s, it was actually, I remember living in L.A. I was there for 12 years. It was kind of hard to avoid knowing about him. people attended the S training, the Earhart Seminars training, in all major cities, and I remember people would come around and they really wanted you to get, you know, kind of recruiting you to go into the seminar. And a lot of them, I remember, they wouldn't take no for an answer. And we heard all sorts of stories about they wouldn't let you go to the bathroom and they kept you in there all day and that kind of stuff. So that was really interesting. But I also met a few people personally who had done the training, and I saw a real change in them. They were really different people. So it kind of got me interested. I didn't take the training myself, but I had several good friends who did. And they really got a lot out of it. So, I mean, I saw firsthand, I saw that, you know, the result of people's experiences going through the training for a few weekends back in the mid-'80s.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't around, you know, conscious during that time. I was a little too young during the 70s, so I wasn't aware of EST. I only became aware through Landmark Education that it was based on the ideas of Werner Erhard and EST. So I wasn't around to experience the phenomenon, as you will, of EST back then. But I'll tell you what was great about doing this project is that I was given access to rare archival footage of actual EST seminars. I spent several weekends combing through hundreds, I'd say maybe even thousands, of tapes from the 70s on, picking out really great scenes from those seminars. Luckily, they did tape quite a few. And it's remarkable, so people will really get a chance to see and experience what it was like to be in a seminar.
Right. It was some of the opinions at the time was that he was very confrontational with people, and you know, he used it was ruthless in getting past people's stuff and helping them to open up. One of the things that that he says in the film is that he was interested in people's ability to get through their stuff, so then their limitations, so that they had an opportunity for true self-expression, and they could actually go into a process which he called completing the past. So it would free people up from the illusion of the life that they have been living. And right off in the beginning of the film, you show some of that footage, and we get to see firsthand, and it's very powerful stuff, even today. I mean, you know, people are there in their 70s, you know, hairstyles and clothing and everything, so it does take you back. But at the same time, it's still, you know, it's still the personal change. And this was really new at the time. No one had really charge money for this kind of a thing before.
Right, and the confrontational style was different, and also in the very business-like manner that the seminars were conducted. But at that time, you had Esalen, you had, you know, Dale Carnegie was like, you know, but everything was mild-mannered, and then you had Buddhists, you know, and the different gurus that were around at that time at the end of the 60s. So there was really nothing like this. And as Werner says in the documentary, there was a human potential fog that existed. And it called for this confrontational style to wake people up out of this fog from the 60s. So I don't know if today it's not necessary to be that confrontational. You still want to wake people up, but not necessary. And I think, you know, even you see in the documentary, he's not the same. His style is not the same.
Yeah, there's later on, there's some video footage of him working in Japan. Mm-hmm. You can definitely see that the style has changed. He's still you know, direct with people, but he's his language is a lot more compassionate and understanding. But he still, you know, gets people still open up and get through their stuff. And one of the things is that in the beginning of the film, he says that people live their lives as if they feel what is so is real.
Mm-hmm.
So people's what he calls people's stories. Right. And things like, you know, my father didn't love me, or you can't trust people, or no one listens to me, or things like that. And he was very successful in using sort of this, what I would call sort of a Zen style, because in Zen, master doesn't say anything. He just hits you over the head with a stick and waits until you get it.
Right, like Karate Kid.
Right, exactly. So Werner was very direct with people. He didn't let them continue believing in their stories. He wanted to get through. And sometimes, you know, he used language to shake people up, to so they would, you know, they would have an emotional reaction, and they would, you know, move their energy in a way that they would, you know, start to look at a little bit deeper. Because, like you said, most people walking around, and even today, they still have this fog. They still live in this sort of the landscape of beliefs that are from, you know, childhood, and that things have been built up over a long time. And one of the things that I really got from the film is a true and sincere appreciation of the scope and depth of Werner's work and how it's permeated into society in all sorts of ways. I mean, you know, you look at things in business today about the terminology, things like breakthrough and the whole aspect of life coaching and people looking to make a difference, and
mm-hmm.
you know, even
mm-hmm.
you know, the words empowerment and get off it and
thank you for sharing.
That all came from mass training. It was just amazing.
People don't realize that it's so true.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, also the distinction that, you know, going back to the reality, people walk around as though, you know, what they feel is real is real. So to break through that, there is a distinction between what you think is real and what is real. And he uses, you know, the analogy of a bear. You know, if you feel there's a bear behind you, well, then how do you react? You're scared, you're afraid, you're worried. But if there is no bear behind you, how do you know? Only if it's physically there is it real. And everything else can be a story, and it's your story, and how you react to that story, but you live your life as though that story is real, and how it limits you in your life. And I think he was all about people being powerful and alive in their life. Like, if you remember from the documentary that you got to screen, you know, he said that to this woman, you know, you're dead, sweetheart. You're a good-looking corpse, but you're dead. Because there was a vacuous look on her face, and there was just, in the conversation with her, you know, he really wanted her to live life. And he just could sense, and he had a remarkable sense of knowing where people were at, you know, getting to the heart of what was limiting them. It was really fascinating to watch that. And just, you know, minutes, he just got them. And it was, you know, remarkable, but it was all in the interest of having people live powerful lives.
Right. And some of the people that we see in the film, we see them today, and they look back on their experience. We actually see them in some of the footage. Was that, did you actually find them in the footage? You know, some of the people who you've interviewed, you know, currently, and how did you go back and find them in the old footage, or was that them, or was it somebody who looked like them? It sort of does.
It's a combination, but we did search for a couple of people that we couldn't find, so we were on a mad search for certain people to follow up with them, but we did get lucky with a couple of people that were in one of the trainings that we focused on a lot. It was such a big training that we managed to find a few people from that event and catch up with them today. But there were a couple people who we really pursued but couldn't locate, which would have been fascinating to do.
Well,
but it's more important to, you know, what they got out of it at the time. They saw it like the orphan. There was a girl named Charlotte who was an orphan. Doesn't even really matter what she's doing now. At that moment, she realized she had bought into being an orphan her whole life, and it limited her. And at that moment, when she saw what she was doing to herself, limiting herself in that way, and that she didn't need that crutch anymore, she was alive like she had never been before, and she divorced herself from this label of orphan. And so whatever happened when she left that seminar, when I'm sure she was profoundly impacted, but at that moment, she was more alive than she had ever been, lighter. And so, you know, even though we didn't find her, the point was still made.
Right. Yeah, it's almost, because I've been in personal growth seminars, and one of the things that happens that's very powerful is that everyone who experiences transformation of some kind in a personal development seminar, you feel that change too. There's actually a tangible energy that is happening in the room, the experience. It's not just the person who's experiencing the shift, but everyone in the room is experiencing the shift. So it's sort of this collective energy that happens. And I'm sure, the F trainings were, it was a profound experience for people, even if they never, you know, had a one-on-one with Werner, you still got the shift in you started to see things inside of yourself just from the experiences of other people. You started to look deeper inside of, you know, what the issues that you were dealing with at the time, being in a seminar like that. I'm sure a lot of people received that benefit. It was very popular, in the Hollywood scene. A lot of people a lot of actors were in it, a lot of movie studios. Heads, you mentioned a couple of the heads from Warner Brothers were in there at one time.
Yeah, they actually called it Werner Brothers instead of Warner Brothers because so many people from the studios had taken Est. It was just, you know, so big. It was just so big.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to go and ask you a little bit more because in the film you cover a little bit of how he originated this training he borrowed from great thinkers, but he put it together in a way that no one else had ever done before. And like we mentioned before, he was the first person to charge money for personal growth training, and many people at the time felt like that was wrong. Like, what are you doing charging money if you want to help people? They have an issue with that. And he was, you know, he just was pioneering in that, in the way that he did it. So what were some of the influences and things that you had found out that you didn't get to cover in the movie that were the sources of Werner's ideas in developing the YES training?
Well, he told me, you know, he took the low road to enlightenment, and he was a voracious reader, and, Buddhism, existentialism, just everything he could get his hands on, management training, you know, just anything that helped in his personal growth, he just soaked up and shared it with the people around him. He was a very successful businessman, and when he got to San Francisco, he had a team of employees, and they were selling encyclopedias at one point. And he was sharing everything that he learned with this group, and I think it just came to a point where, wow, if we could put this all together, this could be really powerful, because he had a powerful transformation by just a shift that had happened one day with reading all this information, and he just put it together in a way that people could relate to. You didn't have to be a Buddhist. You didn't have to study, you know, anything for years. You could just go for a weekend and have, with this information, the way it was synthesized, a profound experience of transformation. And as Werner says in the documentary, it doesn't take a weekend. It doesn't take years. It takes a moment when you experience transformation, when you just get it, like when some light bulb goes off in your head, say, wow, yeah, this shift, the paradigm shift in how you view your world. So it was...
He said that he was driving on the Golden Gate Bridge when it just dawned on him. He had his moment of epiphany.
Yeah, but his life had been empty and meaningless. And what he meant by that was, you know, all the things that had mattered to him, you know, looking good, making a lot of money, impressing people with how successful he was, that all of a sudden he realized it didn't mean anything to him. And after, you know, he said he broke through the sadness of all that, he felt free and alive to go forward like a clean slate, empty. So he could make whatever he wanted of his life, put whatever meaning he wanted in life from that moment forward. And it was a freeing and very, a moment filled with aliveness, and he really wanted to share it. What a great, you know, he wasn't saddled with the past. He wasn't saddled with, you know, what our culture and society had said meant success. And he wanted to share that. And he did in a big way.
Yeah, we really, we get to see in the film, I mean, you had a chance to interview Werner, it looks like a number of times, and we get to really hear his side of the story. In the second half of the program, I want to cover, you know, the whole issue with, you know, how he was attacked in the media, but I want to get to that later on in the show. But I just want to stay with the development of his ideas for just a little bit longer. One of the things that I realized going through transformational seminars myself, one of the aspect that when you get to kind of dredge up your stuff, your stories, and you start to open up, and as I did, I started to see things differently and see myself differently and let go of the past and, as he says, complete the past. One of the things that it makes you care about other people more,
mm-hmm.
and really, I understood when there's an excitement about it when you sort of have an experience, when one has an experience that they're able to break through some of their things and they have that kind of wow, it's like I can do anything I want. I have choice. I can take responsibility for my life.
Yeah, when you're not weighed down by your own baggage, you are free to care more, to relate more to other people, loved ones, to your community, to your, you know, society at large. You know, you have a big opening, a big space.
Yeah. And in Werner's case, just to go into what's covered in the film a little bit, when he was a younger man, he married very young, and then he ended up leaving his family. And he explains the reasons in the film why that happened. I mean, we get to hear from him, we get to hear from his family, from his daughters, from his mother, and there's this wonderful whole sequence of reconciliation that we get to see, and that he actually, he says in the film that, that anything can be made right. He couldn't take back the suffering, but you know, he could build something truly wonderful after the suffering.
Right.
And so, you know, he used the things he developed to deal with his own difficult life situation. You know, he began to walk his talk. He healed his family, but that kind of a thing didn't make the news, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. The way it was portrayed in the media at that time was like, you know, he had this secret path while he was creating this empire, and it just wasn't true. I mean, what happened with his family and leaving them happened when he was young, you know, 19, 20 years old. You know, he was a child himself, a kid, making a big mistake, saddled with a big responsibility, and he chose the road that he did, and he knew that it was a mistake, but he was very young. Only after he started developing the program did he know that he had to go back and clean that up. So he used what he was learning to go back and do just that. You know what I mean? He wasn't
right.
Living this simultaneous, you know, secret life. No, he cleaned it up after his journey, after his awareness of why he did it.
Right. Now, you have a background working as a journalist and a filmmaker, and you know, I have somewhat of a background myself being a journalist. I used to work for both CBS and the U.S. Information Agency in the news. And one of the things that I noticed in the media is that people aren't allowed to make mistakes in life in the media. It's sort of that's kind of unforgivable. But it's the reality of life that everybody makes big mistakes in their life at some point. So, I mean, that Werner's life is nothing different from anyone else's. I mean, there's all things that, that we wish we did differently or can go back, and we all have some regrets at some point. But,
right.
So he was not allowed, he was, vilified in the press, in that regard. But, you know, that's, as I said, that's the reality of things.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you have to accept that if you're going to be a public figure. But, yeah, can you imagine being reminded of something you did when you were a teenager at 40 years old, 50 years old, and it even becomes part of a documentary or becomes part of every article that's written on you? I mean, that's a lot to take. You know, some things you just want to leave in the past. But, you know, when you're a public figure, it's not possible, so you have to accept it. As Don Lattin, you know, from the San Francisco Chronicle said in the program, you know, that's our job. You know, we build people up and we take them down. That's what we do. And that's what the media does. So it's just part of it. You know, it was something that he had to accept.
Right. So in the film, after his reputation was shattered, and we'll, in the second half of the program, we'll cover some of the reasons of how that happened. But he says that, if the game was that I play the game with no reputation, then that's the way it is. I'll just play the game with no reputation.
Right.
I can still do what I want to do. That still leaves me choice, but it's just that I have no reputation. Well, I'll just go ahead from playing the game that way.
It goes for everyone, too. You know, whatever cards are dealt to you, whether it's a physical handicap or a reputation, that you can go on. You can go on and have a fulfilling life and make a big difference in the world. You know, you just play with the cards that you're dealt and don't, you know, be responsible for it and empower yourself to move forward.
Right. Well, Robin, we're going to just take a short break here, everyone, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes, and we'll continue our conversation with Robin Simon and the film Transformation, the Life and Legacy of Werner Erhard right after this break. We'll be right back.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
If you've experienced the power of The Secret and are ready to take it one step further, then it's time to tune into Good Vibes, Bad Vibes, an empowering new show on the 7th Wave Network, live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Good Vibes, Bad Vibes peers into the world of vibrations and reveals just how these energy patterns are manifesting both positive and negative life experiences in our health, finances, environment, and most importantly, our own personal evolution. Join traditional naturopathic practitioners Gay Hilton and George Juhas to unveil the mysteries of instant attractions as well as dislikes. Find out how your energy field can work to manifest success in your finances and retirement. Good Vibes, Bad Vibes will direct your vibrational journey towards mastery of life's greatest mysteries, the quantum world of vibration. Join hosts Dr. Hilton and Juhas and their intoxicating guests every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, right here on the 7th Wave Network. Improve your spiritual well-being and experience a new way of looking at spirituality and wellness. Tune into Spiritual Evolution with spiritual counselor, healer, and animal communicator, Kelly Marie. Each week, Kelly and her guests explore spiritual problem solving and connecting balance between the body and spirit. Spiritual Evolution with Kelly Marie, broadcast every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the 7th Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spiritual Evolution, expanding the boundaries and broadening the vision of spirituality through inspiration and education. The last great frontier is the magnificent mystery of the mind. Abundant evidence demonstrates that we have far more talents than we realize, and that our minds are exceptional instruments we can learn to use more fully, just as we learn to play a piano or a clarinet. Tune in to The Music of Your Mind, Living the Extraordinary, Thursday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the 7th Wave Network, and learn more about how you can hear the wonderful music of your mind.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Well, hi, everyone. We're back with Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero. We're talking today with producer and director Robin Simon, who's made a wonderful new film called Transformation, The Life and Legacy of Werner Erhard. Well, Robin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, Randall. Good to be here.
Tell us where the film is opening, because the premiere is happening in New York City next week.
Yes, it's at the Quad Cinema in Greenwich Village, July 27th through August 2nd, and it's running five times a day, so I think it's a 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 for that length of time. And so if you have any listeners in New York, you can call either the Quad Cinema or go to thequadcinema.com or transformationfilm.com or movietickets.com and get tickets in advance. I think it's sold out the opening weekend in the evening performances, so you really should try to get tickets in advance because it's getting...
Right. Tell us that you've actually had the film play a few times at film festivals, and you've got some terrific reactions from that. Tell us about the response that the film has had so far.
Yeah, we had a couple of, you know, sneak previews, as I call them, at one at the Palm Beach Film Festival, and it was really funny because the festival directors, they didn't realize the following that Werner Erhard had, and it was just standing room only, you know, and they just couldn't understand what was going on. It was like a Tuesday evening, you know, at 9:30, and it was packed. And then at the Atlanta Film Festival, it played a couple of times, and again, it was packed. And one of the performances was at 12 noon on a weekday when most people should be at work, and it was packed. They had not seen that kind of a turnout at the festival at those hours. So, you know, of course, I knew, you know, just from being involved in this project that, you know, there was tremendous interest because there are all of these centers that are around the country, so I just knew that there was a lot of interest, but the festival people weren't aware. So.
Well, yeah, it just goes to show you how much of an impact he's had in the world today. And,
yeah.
Of course, I have a personal debt of gratitude that I owe to him because of one of the words that we use on this channel, on the Seventh Wave Network channel, is transformational.
Mm.
And that I didn't realize that, but after watching the film, I understood that where the source of those ideas came from.
Mm-hmm.
Transformational and visionary, you know, talk radio, and there you go. And it's coming from his ideas. Well, I want to cover a little bit of what happened to Werner Erhard, why he left the United States in 1991. The first part of the film, of course, deals with and shows the seminars and the effect on people's lives. But the second half of the film chronicles what happened to him in the press, and basically a lot of this kind of culminated in a expose on Werner in the 60 Minutes television program. Did you ever go back and try to contact the producers of 60 Minutes and find out a little bit more of why they aired the story on him at the time?
Well, I wrote a letter to them and you know, hoping to get some response, but there wasn't any, and I also tried to get at the transcript of the actual program and was not given access to a transcript. I know there was a lawsuit at the time, so maybe, you know, they burn those transcripts when there are lawsuits involved, but I couldn't get it. It was not available to me. And so I just, you know, moved on, and I interviewed a couple of reporters at the time that were involved in the case and who had investigated what had happened, so I had to just leave it at that.
Right. Well, for those of you who don't know, the film goes into, it sort of takes the stance, it's very unbiased about this, because we hear both sides of the story. There's a sequence where Werner's lawyer is interviewed about how he tried to submit a polygraph test to the 60 Minutes producers, and they didn't respond to it.
Right, and he goes into it in detail. You know, he said, look, your own polygraph, our own polygraph, independent, we will have him there, you know, ask your own questions, and there was no response. So it was, you know, interesting.
Yeah. Well,
at that time, you have to remember, Randall, 60 Minutes was so powerful. today, you know, 60 Minutes, if you have an expose on you on 60 Minutes, it's not great for you, but at that time, that show was the word. Now it's not so much, especially after, you know, some of the hits the show has taken in terms of credibility. It's been knocked down quite a few notches. But back then, it just was a career killer. So, you know, you felt that.
Yeah, and Werner with his, you know, with his philosophy of not being confrontational.
Well, he had a confrontational style, but he was advised, you know, that he wasn't going to be treated fairly.
Right.
And so, you know, he just removed himself from the controversy so the programs could continue, as I understood.
Right, and they became the landmark education.
Right.
So what were some of the things that he was actually accused of, so people understand? I mean, it was some pretty serious, you know, accusations that came out in this report that had to do with his family, specifically.
Right. I mean, the most damaging one, of course, that everyone remembers is that he was accused of molesting one of his daughters. And in the documentary, one of the reporters that I interviewed said that it had been retracted. That accusation had been retracted, and in fact, one of the daughters had sued a writer who was going to get her a book deal if she had, you know, told these stories. And then she sued the writer for, you know, I don't know what the actual suit was for. But, yeah, so it's covered in there. And that was one of the more serious charges. But then, you know, it was also how he was abusive to, you know, people around him. And, you know, when he had a... he was a tough guy, you know, he was assertive, he was strong-willed, but you know, when you have a lot of people who work for you and you're a demanding boss and you want everyone to play the game of perfection and play their best, you know, people may not like it. So you could always find people to say, you know, you're a mean boss, and so that's what they found.
Mm. Well, you interviewed some of his family members, especially his mother, you know, who, you know, when he was younger, he left his family, and she was quite broken at the time. But there's a wonderful scene where we get to see them reunited, and it's like a mother and her son, and it's actually very touching. She really, it reveals a lot about his character. And we see, you know, perhaps that he had not ultimately strayed so far from his philosophy, after all, you know, dealing with the issues with his own family. And now Werner is, what is he, around 70 now?
Yep, the early 70s, I think like 72.
Mm, right.
Mm-hmm.
So in the latter part of the film, we see him traveling around the world, and working with people on both sides of, you know, on the planet. And one of the things that that we see is that he was in Northern Ireland talking with people on both sides of the Irish Catholic and Protestant divide, and also as well as the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Right, he visits quite often in Northern Ireland in Londonderry, and he's very dedicated to helping community leaders bridge the communication gap. And he's done remarkable work there. They love him there. I joined him on one of the trips, and the affection and admiration that they have for him is really remarkable. And that's a charitable organization. That's a nonprofit, and there are many nonprofits that exist today that people may not know that Werner started, like the Hunger Project is one, Youth at Risk, which is a huge organization helping, you know, thousands and thousands of at-risk children. Prison Possibilities is one that he started back then. So he, you know, was very much in the service of people, even though the F program itself made a lot of money. I don't think that was his primary purpose from what I've seen, especially from what I've seen in the kind of work that he's doing today. And he's still very involved in the business world and coming up with, you know, business concepts, working with Harvard University, professors, but it's all not motivated, I don't think, by money, but by improving or empowering people.
Right. There's a couple of people who I've interviewed who, like Dr. Bruce Gregory, who's a physicist from Harvard, mm-hmm. and it, you know, going through the S training inspired him to look at, you know, trying some different things in terms of his ideas and theories about physics.
Mm-hmm.
So it just has applications that are so far reaching beyond, you know, just the personal development, as you mentioned, in the business world and the Hunger Project. And one of the things that he did, didn't the Hunger Project actually, it was geared toward not feeding people, but actually empowering people to give them resources to get what they need to be more self-reliant, like microcredit programs, literacy programs, learning about better farming techniques, and things of that nature. So,
right, and at the time, that was unheard of. You know, now you hear a lot about charitable organizations who do that kind of work. And today, you know, the Hunger Project works closely with all those organizations. But I think the idea of the Hunger Project, and I'm not an expert, it was just from interviewing a few people from the Hunger Project on the program, was that it was changing the conversation about hunger and starvation, that it was something, it was time to end starvation, that it's the time had come, and it's something that shouldn't just be accepted that it's going to happen around the world and, oh, well, some people are going to starve. So it was trying to shift the conversation that the time had come to end starvation. And it was sort of too abstract for some people to get because he wasn't handing out, you know, food packets on the back of a truck. It was shifting the conversation, but that shift in conversation was happening at the UN and many, many, you know, organizations that the Hunger Project was involved in and is still involved in today. But it was controversial because they weren't feeding people.
Right. Well, he made differences in business and diplomacy, the arts, government, charitable organizations, as you said. And he received humanitarian awards mm-hmm. For his work and charitable organizations and things like that. So he was recognized at the time for his work. You know, he made, you know, quite a bit of money, but he put it to use. And then when he left the country, he gave the company to his staff, and he even took on the debts that personally.
Yeah, right, so they could get going because, you know, he had left under a cloud. So he took on the debt for a while, and then I believe they did pay him for his ideas, but when he left, you know, there wasn't much going on, so he assumed the debt for a while. But it was the Mahatma Gandhi Humanitarian Award, that was, I was trying to think of that name of the award that he received, and he was also recognized by Fortune magazine for his contribution to corporate leadership and strategic thinking in introducing the idea of empowerment. That was a big contribution that Fortune offered him.
Well, that's thanks, Robin. I want to cover a little bit about your journey, your personal journey in making this film. How long did it take you to, when you started to look at seriously the idea of doing this, to actually the when you got the film completed, how long a period was that?
Well, 2001. So
it's about 6 years.
Yes, solid 6 years.
Off and on making this film. So how did the project get put together? Did you get independent financing, or just you just did it on whenever you had time, or how did you do all the initial photography for it?
Yeah, it was a group of investors that put up the funding, and I'm sure I saw the financial potential, considering, you know, the number of people that were interested in whatever happened to him. And I was approached about doing it, and we first started off coming up with a blueprint about what needed to be in the program. As a journalist, it was important for me that the program be balanced and unbiased. So it, of course, had to cover, you know, what people wanted to know, which was reasons why, you know, he left his family and why he left the country and that any accusation that was out there that we had to cover, and that had to be. And it was equally important to talk about the ideas and why people were so turned on by them during that time, and also the influence of those ideas in our culture. So it was important that, as a blueprint, I agreed to move forward based on the fact that we had to talk about everything. And then once that was agreed upon, it was just scheduling. You know, he travels 11 months out of the year, so, you know, interviewing him, and then, you know, all the people that surround him, and, you know, have busy lives, so, you know, getting a schedule where I could interview people, you know, it took a year or two for the actual production, and then a year and a half, let's say, to edit and then figure out how we were going to get this out in the world.
Well, being a documentary filmmaker and a journalist and lots of other things in your career, how has this film changed you personally in putting it together?
Good question. Well, I've met some incredible people, and I, you know, as a filmmaker and as a journalist, the reason why I do what I do is I like to inspire and move people and make a difference in their lives by the stories that I tell. And I can say that this film really fulfilled that goal of mine, that I do a project that gives meaning to people, that even people who haven't been involved in the work for a while or who have never been involved in the work, that there's a possibility out there for them now to look at their own lives. And that's great for me. That's great for me as a storyteller.
What advice would you give to other filmmakers who are looking to do biographical type documentaries? What were some of the things that you can tell them in putting together a project like this that would be sort of a little bit of guidance?
Well, it really has to have a story. You know, the person has to be fascinating, but they also have to have, you know, challenges in their life, and you really have to bring those challenges out, because everyone can relate to struggle. So when you're looking for a subject, to make sure, one, it's someone that is really interesting to people, so you need to share the idea. Hey, what do you think about doing? I'm thinking about doing a story on this person, and if they're interested, then you know you're on the right track. So that's important. But you also you can't make a promotional video on anyone's life. It's just not good storytelling. So you need to talk about the drama. You need to talk about the you know, crises that someone goes through, because we all do struggle. So finding a great subject that people are interested in is really key.
Yeah, well, other filmmakers definitely have benefited from the S training. One of them, and everyone will know this, the brothers Wachowski, mm-hmm. who are responsible for the Matrix trilogy.
Right.
Matrix films. They were landmark graduates.
So many people. I mean, I could have done a 2 hours just interviewing the people who got so much out of it and who went on to brilliant careers in business and science and charitable organizations. Just on in the list, but, you know, that's not an interesting story. So I had to hold back, because there were so many people to choose from. You know, I just had to give a sense of, you know,
People who did the seminars, did they approach you? Did they ever get contacted from any graduates who say, well, I want to say what I got out of it?
Yeah, oh my gosh. If you could follow me to, you know, some of these screenings. We did a sneak screening in Montreal, and just at every screening, you know, people would approach me and tell me their stories about what they got out of it. I get thousands and thousands of emails at transformationfilm.com sharing what they got out of it, their lives, their families, and it's just amazing, the story. So it's just great. It's just great to see that kind of impact.
Well, I think that the film's going to continue to get a terrific response, because not only is it interesting as far as, you know, Werner's life and learning, you know, and seeing the behind-the-scenes story, but really sitting through this film, like I mentioned, it's an experience. You really get to look at when your own life, from watching the S-trains in the beginning and then learning and seeing a man who's been through some pretty serious challenges in his life and how he's overcome them. And he continues to be an example, a fascinating and powerful example to people from all walks of life today. And your film certainly captures that.
Well, we're after New York. We're hoping to share the film on television and working on a deal for a national broadcast. And then we'll do a limited theatrical release around the country, probably pick 10 cities, and then some foreign distribution, because the programs are available all over the world. So we'll have a foreign release too. And then after that, we'll offer DVDs. Thousands of people have been asking about the DVDs, and they will be available. But after we, you know, secure the television distribution and limited theatrical release, then we will definitely make the DVD available, and it will include uncut interview with Werner on different topics, you know, having him talk for 5 minutes or so on different topics instead of, you know, how documentaries can only use a few seconds at a time. But the DVD will have more interviews.
I'm sure that people will be very happy to get those. When they buy the DVD, it'll be a really good incentive. Well, so Robin, tell us a little bit about some of the other productions that you're developing and that you're working on at this point with your company.
Well, it's interesting. It seems like someone mentioned to me, Robin, you are the transformation filmmaker, because two other big projects that I'm working on right now are about transformation. One is called The Space Between Us, Crossing the Bridge to Intimacy, and it's about a couple, Heidi and Yumi Schleifer, who travel the world transforming the relationships of couples in crisis. And it's just remarkable, the drama that goes on, not only here in the States, but how universal the issues are among couples and how it relates to solving the crisis in the Middle East, how using these techniques that they do of crossing the bridge and it relate to closing the gap in world relations as well. So that's a fascinating project. And then I'm doing a documentary on Sampath Chandraka, who was featured in Time magazine, and he was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. And his mission is to rescue young girls from the hill tribes in near the Thailand-Burma border, preventing them from being sold into the sex trade. So, and he has a school, and we track the difference between a girl who was sold into the sex trade and one who came to his school, and how the possibilities and how that experience transformed her life. Him going into the hill tribes and rescuing her just transformed her life, put her on a new path. So fascinating.
Well, wow, you're definitely tackle some pretty serious subjects.
Yeah, I'm not into action films, so it doesn't interest me. I'm really into transformation.
Well, that's great. No, it's so wonderful and refreshing to hear a filmmaker like yourself, very enthusiastic about, you know, what you're doing, and realizing, you know, the ability for film to really open a subject to people who have no idea of anything about it, and then learning from a movie the different aspects of the subject, why it's important. I mean, so many things. That's why on this program that we talk every week with filmmakers that are doing just that, and I really congratulate you for stepping out both as a filmmaker, as an artist, as a concerned, you know, world citizen, as a woman, and looking at some of these subjects. So thank you very much for your work and for your artistry and for your commitment to making films that matter.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Randall. Pleasure to be with you. Appreciate it.
All right. Robin, thanks so much for being with us. That's a wrap for our show for this week. Join us again next week as we showcase the very best in movie entertainment. It inspires us towards positive change and honors the belief that simple choices can change the world. I'd like to thank our engineers who put the show together, and especially to Tom Kirsch and the rest of the Catfish Groove Farm Band for our theme music. You can hear more of their really cool tunes at catfishgroovefarm.com. And you can find out more on the internet about Spirit of Film Conversations and the movies we talk about each week by going to my website at spiritoffilm.net. And please tell your friends about where to find our program right here on SeventhWaveNetwork.com. And remember, you are the writer, producer, director, and star of your own movie that's called Your Life. So make it a blockbuster, and it'll be a classic. Until next time, I'm Randall Libero for Spirit of Film Conversations. We'll see you next week.